to my Twitter feed. I see an AI image of, I don't even know what the account was, but it said, we asked AI to create the most unrealistic thing to happen in college football, and this is what it came out with. And it was Mississippi State winning a national championship.
I think you sent it to us. I try to find it.
All I said was, this is factual. Now, this is not the first interaction we've ever had with Mississippi State. It's just not. On TikTok, after our preseason predictions, we said State would go 4-8. Zach Arnett could get fired. That was their floor, and they're not playing really well at all right now. It was mostly sports with Mark Titus and Brandon Walker that tweeted this out. So all I did was, I quote tweeted it, said, it's not that we hate Mississippi State. It's that we understand that in no world is Mississippi State ever going to contend for a national championship in American collegiate tackle football. That's it. Boy, my God, the floodgates opened. And here's where my issue is with Mississippi State fans. Like, I understand, whatever, you know, you're pissed off, you're butt hurt that I said that. The first response was, well, in 2014, we were number four. We were in the playoff. And I said, and then what happened? They're like, oh, well, we were number four, though. And I'm like, oh, well, that's cool. You lost to Ole Miss, and you lost in the Orange Bowl to Georgia Tech. They're like, yeah, but we were contending for a national title. And I'm like, well, I mean,
not really.
I guess, theoretically, but you're contending for a national title in the same sense that every other team in the SEC was contending for a national title. You'd already lost to Alabama in Tuscaloosa. So they then decide that I was getting cooked. So I was like, Jesus, Mississippi State has got to be the softest fan base in the SEC. Argue with the wall. Because they got very, very angry at that tweet. Somebody even bookmarked it. And then now they all said, oh, you got cooked on Twitter. Now we're the softest fan base, yada, yada, yada. My favorite part of all these interactions, and this is just outstanding. Now, I'm sitting here as we record wearing my Alabama polo and repping the Tide. I'm very nervous about the Tide. Not been a great team this year. We'll talk about that in a minute, but every single Mississippi State fan, if you say something negative about them, instead of them defending Mississippi State, they attack Ole Miss. It's such little brother energy. Like, how many other teams in the SEC, like the only other team that I think that does that a little bit every now and then is maybe Auburn. But even Auburn has the dignity to defend Auburn and not attack Alabama. Like, whenever everyone was talking about Lane Kiffin going to Auburn, there was like this debate of like, well, is Auburn actually a better job than Ole Miss? Auburn fans didn't say anything about Alabama. They were talking about Auburn. Mississippi State fans' immediate reaction is, oh, well, does our fan base throw trash on the field at the players, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, you're probably a Braves fan, so yes. and number two, why are you bringing up Ole Miss in this conversation? This has nothing to do with Ole Miss. I'm at a loss for words. And this all they can keep saying is, we literally contended for a national title. And there was one guy who finally said, you won't even acknowledge that we were contenders because you won't put the definition. So I took a screenshot of the definition of contender. And per Mr. Webster and his lovely assortment of words in the dictionary, a contender is a person or group competing with others to achieve something. There are 130 contenders for the national championship in FBS college football every year. Shout out Georgia Southern. Hail Southern, your national championship contender in the eyes of Mississippi State fans. Shout out to all the rest of you guys that are group of five schools. Like, y'all are national championship contenders. Shout out to Mississippi State. You're a national championship contender. Shout out to Vandy. You're a national championship contender. Everybody's a national championship contender in the eyes of Mr. Webster. So round of applause. Just round of applause. That's that. I mean, come on, man. I understand where they're coming from in a way, because they're like, we were competitive in 2014. Where are you right now? Where are you right now? You're in what I would consider like the worst possible place to be as a program. Your NIL collective sucks. They bragged about raising $1.3 million in a week. You want to compare to Ole Miss? Ole Miss raised $8 million in a week last year whenever Lane Kiffin flirted with leaving. They're paying their head coach $9 million. Let's go to Georgia, okay? Mark Stoops making comments about Kirby paying players. Yeah, of course they're paying players. Everybody's paying players, but there's also players that want to go to Georgia because they're really good at developing talent. But Georgia's got a good NIL collective. Alabama's got a good NIL collective. Florida's got a good NIL collective. Tennessee does. You can go down the list. Kentucky. Just go look at the roster that Kentucky recruited from the transfer portal. Two names right off the top of your head. Devin Leary, NC State. He just decided he wanted to go to the foothills of the Bluegrass State and play for an SEC team that hasn't been actually competitive for an SEC championship in a long time for free? No. Ray Davis decided that he was just going to leave Vandy and go to play in Kentucky. Of all the schools that he could have gone and played at, he decided on Kentucky for free? No. Kentucky's NIL situation's better. South Carolina's NIL situation is better. Arkansas has more money in basketball than Mississippi State has in football right now.
I have no idea what direction to go.
Let's stay here because Mississippi State's terrible. They're 3-3. Had a struggle win over Western Michigan this past weekend.
Hey, don't you sleep on the Broncos.
Shout out,
Broncos. God, Chad's voice is just absolutely gone tonight. Completely gone. It is so funny. Like, you know, we were talking about it before the episode started. I honestly didn't notice it until now, but holy crap.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Sound like, well, this is what Mississippi State fans would sound like if they didn't have artificial noisemakers to make their stadium loud.
That's because, see, I'll use it as an example. I walked into work today, and one of the girls I work with goes, "You sound like you smoke 8 Marlboros a day, or 8 packs of Marlboros a day." I guarantee you there are Mississippi State fans who smoke 8 packs of Parliaments a day because they cannot afford Marlboros. That's why their NIL collective is so low. Smoke them cheap ass cigarettes.
Well, that's just attacking their character, Chad, and that is wrong.
It's Mississippi.
Now all three of us are not pissed off the good people of Mississippi.
But we love you.
There's only two kinds of good people in Mississippi, and they Oxford. Live in Hattiesburg and Oxford.
Shout out Golden Eagles. We love you.
Actually, you know, there's good people in Gulfport, but
Luxie.
Jackson?
But, you know. Jackson, good people in Jackson. People, Jackson's like a melting pot of Ole Miss and State folk. Ole Miss used to play in Jackson, actually, back in the day.
So. Should I low key, if there was a stadium that could actually host it, I feel like the Egg Bowl in Jackson would be badass.
That's where it used to be played. I'm pretty sure.
That would be awesome.
But I don't know. Like, look, this is taking the emotion out of it and being like, all right, where the hell did y'all come from? I want to have this legitimate conversation, right? Where do you put? Because Zach Arnett is on the hot seat. There's no denying that. He's 3-3 right now. His best chance at winning a game is probably going to be Arkansas. But
they're not going to win.
But I legitimately think that Mississippi State is the worst team in the SEC West and the second worst team outside of Vandy this year. We'll see. Well, they don't play each other, but I don't think that Vandy's bad. They're very, very bad.
They are bad. But so I don't think Mississippi State's that much better.
So,
I mean, they have turned Will Rogers. They have Zach Arnett has single-handedly ruined any decent draft stock that Will Rogers had.
Will Rogers was not
he's like a third day guy.
He's an air raid quarterback. He's an air raid quarterback.
But I would think though, this is where I can get involved in the discussion because I don't really have a lot to say about the people of Starkville. I really don't.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, but, I don't really care. They're beneath me.
Statesboro, better town than Starkville.
We've had 10 minutes of episode. It has been nothing but Matt trashing Mississippi State fans. are you talking about beneath me?
I think if we're going to talk about Will Rogers, let's go down the line comparatively to Mike Leach quarterbacks. Graham Harrell,
Gardner Minshew,
Luke Falk. I might would take him over Falk and Harrell.
No.
I would probably take him over. I would take him over Nick Fitzgerald. I would take him over.
Nick Fitzgerald was Dan Mullen.
I'm saying just the Mississippi State quarterback in general because they really.
Dak Prescott is the only one that's ever
the only
been
one that's ever been
moderately good.
I played Nick Fitzgerald in high school, fun fact, and I did not think he was that good. Now, granted, he ran the triple option.
Now,
Mike Wright was a good running quarterback.
Mike Wright actually might play because I think Will Rogers got hurt on Saturday. I
think he did as well.
I know that he injured his shoulder, his non-throwing shoulder. How severe it is, they've got to bye this week before they play Arkansas next week. Here's the thing. Let's look at overall situation. Like, if you look in the SEC as a whole, I think everybody knows top two jobs in the SEC right now are Georgia and Alabama. In whichever order that you want to put them, Georgia and Alabama are the top two. LSU and Texas A&M have kind of developed, and you can make an argument for either and being that third or fourth. Ironically, one of the interactions said Mississippi State is in the same boat as A&M.
And that's not true.
That's laughable.
That's not true.
That's laughable.
That's not true. Let me tell you something right now. If Jimbo does not make it through the year and Mike Elko comes in next year with what they already have in place, like, Texas A&M, I firmly believe, with all that money and fan base and everything behind them and the way they recruit, I think Mike Elko would absolutely turn that team into a legitimate national championship contender. Not just one we talk about like we do every year with Jimbo Fisher, and we hype them up to be this. I mean, now granted, this year I don't feel like they got the same hype because they weren't even ranked coming into this week. But that's asinine, to steal a word that Matt uses. That is asinine.
It is. The thing that I feel like people that are fans of smaller SEC universities, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Arkansas.
Respect South Carolina,
Mississippi
though.
State, Missouri, that brand, that group. We'll call it top half, bottom half. All of those are like teetering bottom, or our bottom half, or our teetering bottom half.
If you include the two coming in, I'd put them all in the bottom eight.
Yeah, absolutely. Two coming in, you've got your six blue bloods, which is Georgia, Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, Auburn, and LSU. Yeah. And then add A&M, Arkansas, Texas, and Oklahoma. Those are your top nine programs. Or none.
Mississippi State is 15.
So that's what I said. I said you could argue that Mississippi State right now, without Texas and Oklahoma, is 13th.
But honestly, at the highest, I would put them 14th.
I'm talking about that we're this year. This year, right now, no Texas, no Oklahoma, 13.
Oh yeah, yeah.
With Mizzou being the one question mark. But if you look at Mizzou, they recruited pretty well from the transfer portal, and they've put together a team that is highly competitive and actually pretty good compared to the rest of the league this year.
Yeah. If I have any input on this, it's that you have to be realistic. To be realistic in the way you see things. And I have the same problem with some of the Florida fans that I deal with, that I interact with on social media, because they're like, some of them are just ridiculous. But we have an expectation, and Georgia has an expectation, Alabama has an expectation that we all believe in, that our programs have been there before. Mississippi State is literally living off of Dan Mullen's tenure, a tenure that man went 66-44. And Kirby Smart and Nick Saban have not lost 44 games as a head coach. And they've both been there for over what? This is Kirby's year 7 or 8. Both of them at a minimum of 8 years have not lost 44 games. And Mullen was in Mississippi State for, I think, 8 years, correct?
He was there from 20, I think so. 2010 was his first year.
To 2018.
Yeah.
No, 2017.
Then
we hired him. Yeah, you have to be realistic in the way you see things. If Mississippi State wants to live off the fact that they went 10-3, that's fine. Like, that's the best year you've ever had. That's cool. But be realistic. The fact that Oklahoma and Texas are coming into this conference only makes life worse for you, and they're going to see that, because they are, in my opinion, the 15th ranked job in the SEC. I do not think they're better than Missouri or Arkansas.
I mean, if we're being honest right now, if you're Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Missouri, Vanderbilt, anybody to me that's not a blue blood in the SEC, why are you not looking to lead the conference anyway? I mean, I understand, like, tradition-wise. I'm not going to go there.
But I'm not going to go there either, because I see where you're going with this. But if you're an Ole Miss,
but let him finish though.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
I'm with you, but let him finish.
I mean, even including Ole Miss, and I'm not trying to throw shade at Ole Miss because I think Ole Miss is an SEC team by blood, but Ole Miss with Texas and Oklahoma in the conference goes from being like maybe the sixth or seventh best team in the conference to being like the maybe what, ninth or 10th, 11th best team in the conference. Like, why would you, I don't know. Like I understand too, like bringing in Oklahoma and Texas brings more money to every single school. So even if Ole Miss is not competitive anymore in football, at the very least, they're getting a bunch of money. But if you're Ole Miss, do you even consider, hey, ACC's not that loaded anymore. I mean, Clemson, Florida State, I mean, Duke's not going to be good next year. Mike Elko's going to leave. They're going to be terrible. Miami just lost to Georgia Tech in what was one of the worst endings of a football game I've ever seen the highlights of in my life.
Woof.
That was terrible. Mm. That's awful. And somehow they're still 25th, which drives me crazy.
We'll get there in a minute.
What? I don't want to interrupt your point.
That was it.
Okay, I'm sorry. Anyway, before I go to my point, can we shout out Witt for a wonderful t-shirt idea? SEC by blood. Your t-shirt line. SEC by blood. I love it. Love it.
Trademarked idea.
Trademark that right now. Copyrighted. SEC by blood.
Patent pending.
But no, seriously. Yes, thank you, Witt. But no, seriously. The one thing, just to go, I know what you're saying. Really, I know what you're saying. However, the SEC, and the one thing that I know you guys know that I've always been big on, geography. The SEC is the only conference, even with Texas and Oklahoma, that still somewhat makes geographical sense.
Somewhat. Yes.
Somewhat. Like, I think the two outliers are probably Missouri and Oklahoma, but there's, other than that, there's not a team that's not in a southern state in the conference.
Yeah. Here's the thing that I think of with Ole Miss, and y'all tell me if y'all disagree with this. I think it's dependent. I think it's going to be a lot more fluid than it is right now in 5 years. And maybe in 5 years I'm wrong and Mississippi State has a chance. Here's what's going to matter.
No.
Here's what's going to... No, but, so. But here I don't either. I don't either. That's what I've said. Maybe I'm wrong. Here's where I stand on this, and where's it, where I'm coming from. I don't know what their NIL potential is. Like, I know we've seen that Ole Miss is able for at least 1 year to levy up, open the checkbook, and say, here you go. Get what you need, Lane Kiffin. It's worked out for them so far this year. I would say that NIL is going to play a much bigger factor in what teams are successful, what teams aren't, because you're seeing, like, Arkansas. Right now, Arkansas is not – now, I don't know this for sure, just based off of, like, you kind of follow the trends. And I know that that's one thing that, like, I feel like that's something that Pate says a lot is, like, follow the trends. Let's follow the trends. Kids that are in the transfer portal and are going places, they're not going anywhere based on tradition and love and university and education.
Not anymore.
They're going for money and opportunity. Whether or not they have a realistic chance of going to the NFL or not, they don't know. But the only way that you do know that you get a chance is if you have the opportunity to play and you have money on the table for you to do that. So there's people, there's kids that are getting in the transfer portal, and they're going to schools based off of opportunity and money. So a school like Ole Miss, who we think of collectively as a bottom half of the SEC, this year is probably the second best team in the West. And really, Alabama, okay, their offense didn't have a good day that day. If that game's in Oxford, we might be talking about a different situation just because Alabama's defense is very, very good, but their offense has not played well on the road. We're talking about an Ole Miss team that is arguably the third best team in the SEC this year in the era of NIL, and Lane Kiffin's getting paid $9 million a year in that job, which is kind of unheard of for where Ole Miss is. Ole Miss has put themselves in a position to where they're trying to elevate themselves to a next tier to be and compete with the big boys any year, any day, any week. They want to be competitive. The fans have decided that. I don't think Arkansas is doing that. Arkansas hasn't been very active in the transfer portal, which is kind of surprising. They've been active-ish, but I mean, if you look at if you're Sam Pittman, you should be able to get a lot more money than you have. And based off of things that I've read this week, Eric Musselman, who has been to the Elite Eight twice, I think, in basketball, or three times, Sweet 16 four times.
3 years in a row.
Like, the Arkansas's basketball NIL is doing better than their football NIL. And that's a scary place to be for an SEC team, which is why I could see Arkansas moving on from Sam Pittman, because maybe he's not actively chasing it enough. Kentucky, Mark Stoops, actively
will never be fired, by the way.
And no, and why would he? I mean, you were winning 8-9 games consistently in Kentucky.
He honestly, like, not to get on a different topic, but really, is he the greatest coach in Kentucky history?
Bear Bryant coached in Kentucky.
Mark Stoops, the greatest coach in Kentucky history.
Bear Bryant coached in Kentucky.
Bear Bryant won a national championship in Kentucky.
Bear Bryant won a national championship in Kentucky.
Somebody's gonna have to slap me on the wrist for that one, because I didn't know that fact. There we go.
You've been popped.
Didn't know that. I actually didn't know that. The more you know.
Yeah, Bear Bryant started off in Kentucky. So, anyways, I feel like that's enough. We can exhaust this. This is an off-season topic, most likely. We had a lot of college football action this weekend that we need to recap, starting with what I think Whit brought up earlier, which we've got to talk about. Mario Cristobal with the most god-awful clock management of the century. And then the worst explanation of the clock management ever.
What was the explanation? Because I actually did not see that.
He says, well, we never kneel. It's the kid. The kid should, like, we got our running back has to hold on to the football there.
You're kidding me.
It's on record. He doesn't kneel the ball. It's just something that he doesn't do. And if I'm the AD at Miami, I'm probably filling out some paperwork right now. Yeah, because
I just fired Mario Cristobal. Like, if he said that into a microphone in front of media, you would have a pink slip on your desk. Or it'd say something like, appreciate your time here. McDonald's is hiring. We'd love to have you on campus. It's a great place to work. Need a cashier. Best burgers in town. There you go. Mario Cristobal. I would rather have Manny Diaz back than have Mario Cristobal make calls like that, because put Manny Diaz back in there with the players they have right now.
Here's the exact quote. I thought we could have got a first down. Got to have two hands on the ball.
Those poor kids. That running back and that DB who gave up that big touchdown. I feel so bad for them, and anybody who blames them is incorrect. Because those kids should have never been put in that situation.
No.
Never.
Let me ask you this.
My only question is this. What the hell were you doing? What were you doing?
I said the same thing. I said the same thing when it was happening live. What was your question?
Here's my question. If you're Mario Cristobal, Miami hires Mario Cristobal because they want to compete for national championships again. Miami yes. should be winning national championships somewhat every 20 years at least. Honestly, more than that. Has Kirby Smart ever blamed a player for a bad call? Has Nick Saban ever blamed a player for a bad call? Did Ed Ogeron ever blame a player for a bad call?
Probably. You couldn't understand him, but he probably did.
Exactly. Exactly my point. Dabo Swinney, I don't think I've seen Dabo Swinney blame a player for a bad call. He might have blamed Jesus, but he's never blamed a bad player. So at the end of the day, national championship winning coaches do not ever blame players, even if it's not their fault. They always take blame. They say, it's all right, it's my fault, coaching staff's fault, we got to do a better job of seeing what was there in front of us during the game, blah, 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 blah. No good coach ever says, should have held on to the ball.
No. And that kind of I kind of raised the question. I was having a conversation with my cousin about this weekend after it happened. Mario Cristobal is a phenomenal recruiter. He showed it at Oregon. He showed it so far at Miami. He's done a great job in the portal. But Mario Cristobal, is he anything more than a 9 or 10 win guy who's a good recruiter? Like we've never seen him at Oregon. He loses to Arizona State. You go back to that year, Oregon had a really good team with Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
Like they never finished at Oregon.
That's a trend across the board with good recruiters.
It is. It is. And it really may like I like Cristobal. I really do, but God, that was the most ridiculous decision. You throw away a win against Georgia Tech. Now you put yourself going into this week. They have a huge game on the road this weekend conference. And now you just put yourself in a hole. Like an unnecessary hole that should have never happened. You should have never been in that situation. And then you blame the kids. And if I'm the kids, like, how do I feel? Like you,
like, exactly like the player that was on the bench that said, "What the F is going on?"
He literally, one of Miami's linemen.
What the F are we doing?
What the F are we doing? Literally, you could see it on the faces of the kids on the Miami sideline. It was bewilderment. Bewilderment. Unbelievable.
And you almost had a similar situation in the Alabama game. I don't know, Whit, you didn't see this. You were at Auburn Rodeo, missed. Look,
I will be straight up with every person listening to this show right now. I did not get to watch any football at all this weekend besides Texas-Oklahoma, and I watched a replay of the Georgia game. That was about it. And LSU-Missouri. I saw that whole game.
So, and this is where, to your point, Whit, Jalen Milroe, it was a 6-point game. Alabama had just gotten the ball back. It was a first down and 10. And there was, I think, a minute and 20 seconds left, somewhere around there. There was enough time that Alabama could kneel three times, and the clock's done. Jalen Milroe on first down decided, because A&M stacked the box with all 11 guys to stop the run, Milroe decides that he's going to throw a screen pass. And it was like midway he realized, like, what am I doing? And he just shorts it. So it's a free timeout for A&M. Like, what are you thinking? And now Saban exploded. In the moment he called a timeout, he exploded. He had his moment. And after the game, he said, "We've got to do a better job of making sure that our kids understand the situation." That's what a good coach is supposed to do. Texas, Oklahoma, though.
Yeah.
Not to get the ball rolling on like exciting games. I'm sure Lando, who is not with us this week, but man, what game. Start to finish. Excitement.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very great. It's just, oh my God. That was one of the greatest games I've ever seen. And sorry about that awkward pause there. I was watching the goal like you were. Me and Matt have opening night of the NHL on over here. We both got a little distracted for a second. But let me ask you guys this question, because this is how I feel now after watching that game. Two things. Number one, how excited are you for the Big 12 championship rematch?
Oof. It's going to be... I'm excited, and I feel like it would only do it justice.
You guys really think Kansas State, TCU, and the Big 12 championship again?
Shut up. Play with me. If you're about to say that it belongs in the Cotton Bowl, I'm all for it.
Yes, Jerry absolutely.
Jerry needs to give it up. But Texas State Fair in December. I don't care how cold it is in Dallas.
It's not that cold. It's Texas.
Yeah. Texas gets snow. They get some more snow than we do.
Not real snow. It's like hot, not humid, dry snow.
Anyway, not a conversation about snow. But my second question to you guys is, do you agree with me that both those teams look like they're absolute national championship contenders?
Oh, man, I was going to pose this question to y'all. There's 11 teams this year that could legitimately make the playoff. Legitimately could make the playoff. 11. You maybe even argue 12. Maybe even 13.
So you're saying that we should have a 12-team playoff?
No.
Oh,
no,
Matt. No.
Oh, Matt did it.
Yeah, he did it.
I'm not.
He did it.
No.
He did it.
Nope. Not going down that rabbit hole. I do not agree with the 12-team playoff. We need to go back to the BCS. Yep,
and I just edited that. I agree with the 12-team playoff. I hated the BCS. It's going on there.
What I'm saying is that right now, we're 6 weeks in. We still have half the season left. There's things that are going to happen. There's upsets that are going to happen. But if you look at it right now, if the season ended today, argue your four.
I four?
It's much more difficult.
I have those two in it. I do. That was a national.
Then who stays out?
That was a national championship caliber game.
But who are you leaving out?
Right now?
Because let's look at the undefeateds. Undefeateds alone.
I need to see Oregon and Washington this weekend. I'm jacked for that game.
That's a great game.
I'm so jacked for that game.
Is that 3:30 game?
3:30 game.
It sucks because it's noon there.
It's noon there.
It's 2:30 Central Time, where I'll be in Nashville. Nashville, Tennessee. And I have a wedding at 5, so I actually get to watch at least the first half. So,
bolstering Nashville.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to Josh Pate's wedding, which is pretty cool.
Shout out to Josh Pate's girlfriend.
Shout out, Josh Pate.
Finally seen her.
So here's the thing, though. Like, when we talk about this, like right now, if the season ended, Florida State's undefeated with a big win over LSU.
Georgia, Michigan, Washington.
Oregon. USC's undefeated.
They're
still undefeated. I'm not saying that they're going to win. I think they've got a loss in their schedule somewhere.
Oh God, they've got a stretch that's just as hard as the one Notre Dame's in right now.
But I mean, it's gonna be brutal. But like, for example, Texas and Oklahoma, it's gonna play itself out. Texas and Oklahoma have to play again.
Oh, I'm so excited to see it.
Let's just say both of those teams went out. Let's play hypotheticals. This is a fun game. Texas wins out. Oklahoma loses in the 12 championship to Texas. That means that Texas and Oklahoma each have a loss.
Both got to go.
Florida State wins out. Georgia loses to, let's say, Ole Miss, and then wins the SEC championship against Alabama.
Alabama's out.
Michigan wins out, goes undefeated. Florida State wins out, goes undefeated.
What about the Pac-12?
He's
got a point.
So the way that this it's going to work itself out.
Yeah. Okay. I was going
to work. It's going to work itself out.
We do this every single year, week 7. I swear to God, every single year. It's all right. Look, this is why we need a 12-team playoff. There's legitimately 15 teams that should be playing for a national championship this year.
But even this year, I feel like if the 12-team playoff were this year, teams 8 through 12 would have a legitimate shot of winning that first game the road.
You know who you didn't even mention?
Maybe.
You didn't even mention Penn State and Ohio State.
You got to think, like, it depends on how all of these matchups work out. Like, I didn't even mention anything about, like, Penn State or Ohio State, like Chad said. Alabama's sitting at number 11 right now. And they're not playing pretty, but they're winning. They're winning with an identity now. It's starting to come together a little bit. Nick Saban is still the GOAT. Like, I don't know how the hell he did that with this team this year. He's taking Jalen Milroe, and he's given that offense an identity. The defense is playing out of its mind really well. I just don't – I feel like this year you could have a – I mean, and this is a fun year. This is a really fun year so far.
I feel 07 vibes.
I mean, imagine the last year of the Pac-12 being the best conference. It's the best conference in the country.
And the last year of the 14 playoff.
And the last year of the 14.
That's been delayed, remember? That's been delayed.
Are we sure it's been delayed? I knew they they changed. They said that the rules were going to change.
We did not talk about that last week.
I don't believe that they're delaying
it. That is now in question.
No, it's not.
I think the rules of how it's going to be laid out, the format's in question.
The rules are in question.
I think we're still getting a 12-team playoff next year no matter what.
The reason that they're changing it is because there's a likelihood that there's only going to be four power conferences. And so right now it's the six conference champions. So what that would
told y'all that was going to happen, by the way.
Yeah,
but the way that they've got it all laid out is
eight conference champions now.
I mean, dude, honestly,
bring in the Mac.
God, it's going to be
Mac. I
mean, they're also trying
Tuesday night games.
They're also trying to change it for being at large bids to next eight ranked, whatever
That's exactly how it should be.
But here's the kicker. You want to know the funny thing? Going to rank them in the same way that they put the at large bids in, so it doesn't freaking matter.
They still have the playoff committee. It's not like it's the discussions are going to be the same as they are now. It's just more teams.
But I'm okay with that. I would rather it be that way.
But it's stupid.
I would rather it be that way.
Here's the issue. It's going to come down to they're going to go back to computers eventually or something because they're going to be like, well, how do you differentiate between the 12th best team and the 13th best team in the country?
You know,
especially
how?
In a year like this year.
You know how? AP poll. The model.
Model only had 24 teams in it this week.
The JP poll.
The model went undefeated.
The JP poll probably has Iowa State ranked right now. Every single year, Iowa State is somehow in the top 10.
You don't know. He hasn't dropped the AP poll. He's talking about it right now.
It's definitely Iowa State somewhere in the top 25.
All I know is that this year's crazy. This past weekend was great. Football is awesome. College football is awesome. And Mississippi State fans are soft as goose shit.
We're going to, now that that's all over with, we're going to pour one out. Whit, you pouring one out for this week?
So neither of mine are sports related. I'm pouring one out for Zach Bryan. Dude puts on an incredible concert. Instead of spending my day watching one of the better college football weekends of the season so far, I got to watch the noon game, so I'll take that. We didn't leave Atlanta until about 2 o'clock. I spent the entire day at Auburn Rodeo, didn't have any service whatsoever. I missed the Georgia game. I missed the Braves game. I missed watching Alabama beat A&M. I missed a lot of really good games, so it sucked. But, you know, Zach Bryan's phenomenal. The concert was awesome. I would say this, when we first went on the way down there, I was kind of regretting it. I was like, it's a 2-hour drive. I got to drive there and back. We're not going to get home until super late. Like this, you know, maybe not the right way to spend my birthday weekend, but at the end of the day, it was phenomenal. I had a great day. It was nice not having my phones on me the whole day. So, pour one out for Zach Bryan, Revival, the encore, phenomenal song. One of the most electric experiences of my life. So
it's got to be the most electric. It's got to be it's top five most electric encores of all time.
I think it is the most electric encore of all time. I've been to two.
It's got to be the most electric country music encore of all time.
At the very least, yes. Absolutely.
Also, by the way, you didn't miss the Braves game Saturday. There was nothing to see.
Yeah, no, that was a good game to sell my tickets for. I'm glad I went yesterday instead of Saturday for sure. Going to be cutting off myself for something that just happened while you guys were on mute before we started the show. So completely not sports related whatsoever. So if you guys like sports, just skip through this. So I got Longhorns for dinner tonight. I got home kind of later. Didn't get back till about 7:30. Didn't get chips, but I did get chips. Parmesan crusted chicken, broccoli, and then a sweet potato. And the people there were really nice. They ended up giving me two loaves of bread, which was great. I didn't eat both of them. They're sitting in front of me, so don't think I'm a massive fat ass. But they did give me, you know, everything in there. And I opened up the box with the chicken and everything. And there's this like little dessert, like a little like cup of dessert. I'm like, oh, this is really cool. And I look at it and it's like, all right, this is some kind of weird like cinnamon ice cream thing. Like, I don't know what the heck this is. And so I'm eating my meal, whatever, just going through it. And I eat the chicken, I eat the broccoli. Usually what I get when I go is all that and then the salads. So I don't normally get the potato. You guys are already laughing. So I got a sweet potato, which of course is served with
the butter.
With butter and cinnamon. So I ate half of a cup of butter and cinnamon thinking that it was ice cream, like some kind of like churro dessert. I was not 100% sure on what it was until I realized that I had a sweet potato and not a salad. And I was like, oh my God, I am such a moron. So
literally give
it's
you
so
that
good though.
Oh, it's so delicious.
It's so good. But
literally at every steakhouse you go to, Longhorn, Logan's, Texas Roadhouse, they all give that cinnamon butter out, man.
I still got a little bit, so
he's got a spoon in that shit.
I got my fork in it. And I'm not gonna lie to you, it tasted pretty dang good. I might order it for dessert next time I sit inside of a Longhorn. So
if you thought it was ice cream, did you not notice when you picked it up that it wasn't cold?
I didn't notice that at first, but then when I took my first bite, I was like, all right, this definitely isn't ice cream. Must be some kind of weird churro Mexican dessert at the Longhorns. I guess Longhorns is into churros now.
No,
I don't
Texas
know.
Texas is close to Mexico. It's all the, you know. It's one and the same, right?
It was one of the not smarter moments of my life, but I thought you guys would find that pretty funny. So cutting off myself, which I feel like normally I pour one out for myself, so I'm cutting off myself. So
God, what an idiot.
What a moron. Chad, how about you? Who are you pouring one out for?
So I'm gonna pour one out for Ben Ingram, Braves radio broadcaster. I sent you guys those two radio calls today. Austin Riley's home run and Michael Harris's double play to end the game. That's why, in case any of you are wondering why I sound like this, Matt can attest to it. I went from full-on depression watching the Braves last night to absolutely losing my mind in the span of like two half innings. So, but shout out Ben Ingram, Braves radio guy. I went on 680 The Fan's Twitter today, and if you guys are Braves fans or just like enjoy baseball or radio calls in general, go on 680 The Fan's Twitter. Shout out 680 The Fan. His radio calls of those two plays last night were absolutely impeccable. Like, it was two of the most incredible, exciting ways to call a play you can't physically see. And like, I appreciate that because I know Matt does too, because like Matt and I grew up, I know Matt grew up the same way I did. We listen to the Braves on the radio. Listening to the Braves on the radio is like a massive part of my childhood. Anytime I'm in the car and the Braves are on, if I'm not in front of a TV to watch it, or if I'm not like able to watch it on my phone and I'm driving, I always pull up the 680 The Fan app and listen to the live Braves broadcast through my Bluetooth. So I love Braves baseball on the radio. It's a long time part of my life. And just shout out to Ben Ingram. If you, like I said, if you haven't heard those calls, and go listen to those calls on 680 The Fan's Twitter page or Instagram or wherever. They were absolutely, absolutely incredible. excuse me, man. My throat is killing me. And I'm cutting off. I know we've already talked about this, but I have to do it. I'm cutting off Mario Cristobal. Like, I don't know what else to say. That was some of the dumbest, incoherent stupidity I think I've ever seen. And my little and then his excuse he gave, it's one of the most incoherent things I've ever heard. And my little brother's girlfriend last night tried to tell me that Austin Riley and Ashton Kutcher look alike, and that was one of the stupidest things I've ever heard in my entire life. Mario Cristobal, good God, dude, you're supposed to be a coach, you're supposed to encourage your players, you're supposed to love your players. It's inexcusable. It's inexcusable, and now you have to salvage your season, your playoff life, your ACC championship life this week on the road, which is a game we'll pick here in a few minutes. So, Mario Cristobal, you're cut off, dude. That was just one of the worst things that I've seen and heard, and it was awful. It's an inexcusable loss. It should have never happened with you.
Oh, yeah, I am pouring one out this week. Honestly, I'm gonna go a little off topic here because I'm pouring one out for hockey. Like, I don't know why, but this has been the most excited that I've been for NHL season to return in a long time. Probably because Connor Bedard was the number one pick. Blackhawks had it. I'm watching hockey while recording the podcast. I love this time of year because it's a little chill in the air. Hockey comes back. The NBA comes back. I really don't care about the NBA. Hockey has become like a playoff baseball. Football's in conference play. Everything about this time of year is great. And hockey is just like one of those things that I always enjoy for about gosh dang it, Whit. Oh man,
Whit is actively eating butter with a fork.
He's eating his churro butter.
It's a churro dessert.
Yeah, he's eating his churro dessert. Anyway,
people are gonna go back and listen to this after Whit has a massive blockage at the age of 39 and wonder why.
So I'm normally like I like hockey really early on. And that's probably what's going to happen this year is I'm going to keep up with hockey until about January, and then I'm going to tap out and I'll just keep up with the Blackhawks updates that I get on Bleacher Report. I like midweek hockey. It's good. It's fun. Yeah.
Shout out playoff hockey though. Playoff hockey's awesome.
Playoff hockey's outstanding. And you know who I'm going to cut off? It's not who you're thinking. No, you're all thinking it. I'm going to cut off Mississippi State. No, not doing it. I'm cutting off Arkansas. And for one reason and one reason only, if you get on to any form of social media, message board, etc., there is a lot of Arkansas hate towards Sam Pittman. And look, to be honest, I understand you're frustrated. But if you watch the way that Arkansas's team is constructed, and I do understand that he's in charge of construction of the team, it's a first-year offensive coordinator with a fifth-year senior quarterback. He's learning a new offense. Dan Enos, his play calling is actually not very good. The offensive line is not good, and that's Sam Pittman's bread and butter. Man, like, what do you expect if you're an Arkansas fan? I feel like, and this may be incorrect to say, but honestly, I truly believe Sam Pittman was his own worst enemy by winning as quickly as he did at Arkansas. And you hate that for a guy because by all accounts, Sam Pittman seems like an awesome dude, seems like a great coach that you would want to play for. Honestly, the team's been competitive. They almost beat LSU. They were down to the wire with a pretty decent BYU team. Like those are two games that were swing games. Now it's kind of spiraled on them. They lost Ole Miss. They're going to Alabama. Presumably they're going to lose that game. It's not a great spot to be if you're Arkansas right now and if you're Sam Pittman. And, you know, I want Arkansas fans to do one thing for me, if you ever listen to me, please make this breakup very amicable. He's been a nothing but great for your program. He saved you when you were down, and I see a lot of Arkansas fans giving him a lot of hate on social media, and it's not deserved. You wouldn't even be anywhere near where you're at today if it was not for Sam Pittman. Let's just revisit the Chad Morris years.
I'm not an Arkansas fan.
Me neither.
Let's not.
Me neither.
Let's never do that again.
That was bad. That was bad. So just throwing that out there, be careful what you wish for. I think that's enough with the poor one outs. Let's get into some picks.
Yeah, let's get into some picks. And so normally we have a game to pick in every time slot. This week we do not. Unfortunately, if you look at this week's FBS noon slot, it's no offense, Matt, because Alabama plays at noon. No offense, Whit, because Georgia plays at noon. Not good. It's not very good at all. Please don't say anything. I saw you try to pick up that microphone. Don't you do it. Normally.
Well, the Georgia-Vanderbilt game. Sorry.
Shut your face. Normally, we would at least give a quick pick of our alumni, Georgia Southern, who does play at noon this week in a pretty solid game. But I hate that we got to pick this first, but it's at 3:30. 3:30 on ABC, 3-point favorite. I briefly mentioned it earlier in the show. I am so, so, so excited to watch this game. Live from Seattle, College Game Day is going to be there. The Any Given Saturday tour is going to be there. Josh Pate's going to be in Seattle. 3-point favorite, Huskies, Oregon. Basically a pick 'em. home with Vegas giving Washington home field. But who you got?
Man, I'll be honest. I like Oregon. I haven't gotten to watch either one of these teams as much as I would have liked to this year just because of how busy I've been. But I've watched some highlights. I've gone back, watched a couple of replays of games. I think top to bottom, including defense, Oregon's just a better team than Washington. Washington's offense is nasty. Michael Penix might be the best quarterback in college football. I would not argue against you if you told me he should win the Heisman. That dude can sling it. He might throw for 450 yards in this game. But I like Bo Nix. I like what Oregon's doing on offense. I think Dan Lanning's got that defense playing really well. Right now, I think Oregon's the best team in the Pac-12. So I'm going to take Oregon. And you said it's pretty much a straight-up pick'em, Chad?
3-point game, which basically means it's a pick'em, and Vegas is giving Washington 3 for home field.
Yeah, I'm going to take Oregon with the points for sure. And I'm going to take Oregon straight up as well. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, this is a... Man, honestly, this is such a good game. I'm going to go... It's in Seattle, right? I'm going to go Washington just because of that. Home game, atmosphere, UW is going to be rocking. This is a tough pick'em, though, because part of me wants to go Oregon because I do think that they have, like, two really good head coaches that are, like, kind of finding their own in the Power Five. Dan Lanning, a lot of people are saying that Alabama's going to pursue him very, very hard whenever Nick Saban does decide to retire. Would not surprise me. Would welcome it. But Dan Lanning at Oregon, he has kind of turned them more away from what Mario Cristobal had them at, which was, hey, they're going to be really overhyped and probably lose a game they shouldn't, to a very, very, very good, sound, tough, physical team. They're really good. Washington, also very, very tough, sound, physical football team. Crazy that we're talking about the Pac-12 being the best conference in the country this year. Michael Penix, Heisman weekend. If he wins this game, he's putting Caleb Williams on notice. Which Caleb Williams can put up all the stats in the world. If him and Michael Penix are comparable at all, Michael Penix is winning it. I feel like that's just the voters don't want a back-to-back winner if they can avoid it. But, yeah, I'm gonna go Washington here in a little bit of a shakeup in the Pac-12 over the Ducks.
I'm on the same boat with Matt. I'm going to have to take the Huskies. And I think the biggest reason I'm taking the Huskies is the same reason that Vegas has given the Huskies the 3 points. Because they're at home. Not a lot of people understand. If you look back throughout, like when Chris Peterson was at Washington, that was a hard place to play. The place is loud. We've seen before, and this is on an NFL basis, but Washington's legit. I think Washington's a national title contender. 12th man at the Seahawks games, it's going to be pretty much the same thing at Husky Stadium, just on the opposite side of Seattle. This may have the opportunity to rob Oklahoma and Texas of what they did last week and play the game of the year. Kalen DeBoer and what he has done in just his second season at Washington is nothing short of awesome. Kalen DeBoer has had Michael Penix 3 years. You go back to 2020 when Michael Penix had that really good year in Indiana, a solid season. Kalen DeBoer was their offensive coordinator, took the head coaching job at Fresno State, and in 1 year at Fresno State playing really good football. And what he did last year at Washington and what he's done this year at Washington, look, Washington's physical. I've actually watched Washington this year. I was high on Washington in the preseason, and I'm still high on Washington now. I think both these teams are playoff contenders, and we very well could see these two teams playing again. I think there's a lower chance of seeing these two teams playing again, lower chance at least than Oklahoma and Texas, just because, like Matt said, the Pac-12 is the best conference in college football this year, which is a great swan song for that conference. Give me the Huskies. I think Michael Penix can out-duel Bo Nix with the home environment on his side. This is going to be awesome, and I actually think this is going to be, for as good as both these quarterbacks are, both these teams play physical, tough-nosed football up front. This may be way more low-scoring than you think it's going to be. Give me the Huskies at home. So, so, so looking forward to this football game on Saturday. Moving on, CBS 3:30. Texas A&M, 4-2 coming off the loss to Alabama. Tennessee coming off a bye week at 4-1. Tennessee, 3.5-point favorite at home in Neyland. Witt.
So this is a must win for both of these teams. A&M, one SEC loss to Alabama this past week. Put up a good showing. Actually got the replay on right now, so I'm actually watching the game. And Tennessee coming off the loss to Florida. They got one SEC loss. Obviously, they get Georgia in the next couple weeks towards the end of November. So I think this is going to be a tough one. I think it's going to be really close. The way that Tennessee has looked this year to me, I just don't think they look like they are fluid. Like, I don't know what it is. It's like Joe Milton just hasn't found that rhythm with the receivers yet. I have no idea. Squirrel White looks great. Everything else about it, the defense, nothing really looks that good to me from Tennessee. So I'm going to take A&M to get the upset in Neyland. What was the point spread, Chad?
3.5.
Toward two, A&M?
Tennessee.
Okay, so upset in Neyland. Sounds like it's the same deal as it was for Oregon, Washington, just a home team spread. So I'm going to say A&M wins. I think they win by like maybe a touchdown at most. It's going to be a really good game. This will be one of the better games of the weekend as well.
This game starts off as a low-scoring game and turns into a shootout late. I also like the Aggies here. And I like the Aggies because I find it ironic that Tennessee has their stadium in the namesake of General Neyland, who is a Texas A&M Aggie. So, shout out to him for not really being a full Tennessee man. And I just hope Tennessee loses because I don't like them. Actually, my real analysis is Tennessee is very okay this year. I think A&M is good. They just make a lot of mistakes. They made mistakes in that Alabama game that put them behind the eight ball, but in all honesty, A&M had a lot of opportunities to win that game and probably should have won that game in many ways. A&M is a pretty good team. I think they're going to put it together against a very okay Tennessee team. Like, I don't think Tennessee's all that great this year. They're just kind of right there with the rest of the league. Very average. Aggies.
I am going to disagree. And this is going to be a theme of pretty much a lot of the games that we pick tonight. Got to give home field to Tennessee. Now, I think this game, because Tennessee has already lost to Florida, I think Tennessee was exposed just a little bit as being overhyped, and Joe Milton does not like pressure. And at Texas A&M's front, outside of the Miami game, and even last week, they got after the quarterback. Texas A&M has a good front. There's questions on the back half of that secondary. Jalen Milroe threw for 330 yards last week at home. While Texas A&M was at home, their defense gave up 330 yards to Jalen Milroe at home. You got to go on the road. I think this game is vastly important for the future of Jimbo Fisher. I think it's hugely important for his tenure. I think if they lose this game, as good as Max Johnson has looked, and Max Johnson's looked pretty solid since he's taken over, even with that good front four that Texas A&M has, just don't, unless they get pressure on Jalen Milroe and overcome Neyland, because 3:30 on CBS, name brand like Texas A&M coming in, Neyland's going to be hot for it. Just, again, home field to me in the way Neyland's going to be fired up, I've got to favor Tennessee. Give me Tennessee with the points. Again, same thing as Washington. Like I said, this game far, far more important for the future of Texas A&M football than it is for the future of Tennessee football, in my opinion. I think Tennessee knows that they're probably not going to win the East. We're just kind of rounding in the form, and they've already lost to Florida. They still have to play Kentucky. You know, Tennessee, South Carolina, that game's already happened. But then they still got to play Missouri. We saw a lot this week that Missouri is no slouch. So Tennessee still has Alabama on their schedule as well. Like, I think Tennessee knows they're not going to win the East. So Tennessee's going to be more jacked up for this game. A&M in wounded animal mode. But like I said, this game way more important for Texas A&M. But give me the Volunteers because they're at home. So staying in the SEC, this is a game that we talked about when we were doing our preseason predictions. And even with the way that Auburn has kind of played this year, I still think this is an important game, both of these schools. 7 o'clock ESPN, 3-2 Auburn on the road at number 22 LSU, 4-2 LSU, 11-point line in their favor. Witt, what are you going with?
I think this is an absolute beatdown for LSU, but I think Auburn scores a lot of points in this game. LSU's defense has looked absolutely atrocious against every single team they played this year. So I think LSU wins. I think Jaden Daniels goes for almost 600 yards because that's what he's done almost every single game. And I think the ending score is something like 69-31. Like something like honestly, like how the SEC championship was with Georgia and LSU this past year. Like the winning team puts up an absurd number, but the opposing team just scores a crap ton of points because the defense just doesn't want to play football. So I think Peyton Thorne has another big rushing touchdown. I don't see them having more than 40 yards passing in this game. But LSU is going to score some over 60 at least, and they're going to win by at least 3 touchdowns. So I'm going LSU big.
I'm with Witt. LSU big in this one. I think that not only is this Auburn not being very good, I think Hugh Freeze is saving his shiny bullet in the chamber for next week, which is Ole Miss week. Hugh Freeze wants that one bad. He can say all the things in the media and be like, oh, no, deep down he wants that one bad, and he wants it. That's a big game for Hugh. I think this week he's going to go pretty vanilla on offense. This isn't a game that Auburn's supposed to win anyways. I think he tries to keep it vanilla. He's taken over the offense, and he's going to try and save a little bit of juice. No pun intended to Lane Kiffin's dog. He's going to try and save a little bit of juice for the Ole Miss game, which is going to be a night game in Jordan-Hare, which is that's a scary one if you're an Ole Miss fan. But LSU big in this one. I just don't. No matter how bad LSU's secondary is, Auburn doesn't have the skill players that are any better than the quality of bees that LSU has. They're pretty equal. So LSU big. And Daniels is legit.
And Daniels is legit. And we were sitting here talking about Heisman's with Michael Penix earlier, but I think Jaden Daniels is also in that conversation as well. Jaden Daniels having a phenomenal year. He's the best quarterback in the Southeastern Conference. Let's go back to our preseason predictions. A man of my word said that Hugh Freeze is going to have that game that he pulls out of his ass out of nowhere. If there's any game for Peyton Thorne to have a secondary for as mediocre as Peyton Thorne is that he can throw all over, it's this one. LSU's secondary is really, really bad. They're not good at football. Look, Brian Kelly, big win on the road last week against Missouri, survived a sleepy start. Now you come home for Auburn. You know Auburn's going to be jacked up to win that game and play that game. I've got to go with the Tigers. Once again, man of my word, I said it in the preseason. I just don't think LSU's secondary is good enough to survive these games, even at home. And I could very well be proven wrong. I don't have a lot of faith in this pick. I'm losing in the standings. It looks like at this point I'm going to be on a plane to Boise in December. But I got to go with the Tigers. This is Hugh Freeze magic. Winning a game, Hugh Freeze should not win. Just look at last year as an example when he was at Liberty. They go into Arkansas, win the game. And then what happened? Liberty absolutely just was a folded tent the rest of the season. And I just see it happening again. I made this pick in the preseason. I'm a man of my word. Be the Auburn Tigers to pull off the upset. Kind of puts LSU in a tricky spot the rest of the way. Last SEC pick, I think that this is one of the biggest slept on games of the week because it's two teams who both have a loss now, kind of forgotten about these teams. But SEC Network, their night game, live from Lexington, Kentucky, still ranked number 24, Kentucky at 5-1, Missouri no longer ranked, they're at 5-1. 2.5-point favorite, Kentucky. Once again, Vegas basically just given the home line the team that's at home. That was very, very
another pick 'em.
That was like very, very me saying the same thing for no reason. But Kentucky, Missouri, 7:30, 2.5-point favorite, SEC Network. Witt.
Well, after watching Kentucky against Georgia this past week, I don't think I could pick them. I mean, they looked really good against Florida, but at the end of the day, how good is Florida? So I think Missouri's a good team, man. I mean, they've looked a lot better this year. Drinkwitz is pulling out all the stops. Luther Burden, arguably one of the best receivers in the country, might be the best receiver in the country. Cook looks great, too. I mean, they just look really good. So I'm going to say Missouri, and I actually think Missouri wins this game by at least two touchdowns. I think Ray Davis has another really good game. I don't think Missouri has the front seven to stop him like Georgia did, but I still think Missouri wins this game pretty handily. So, Mizzou. Matt, what do you think?
I'm actually surprised. I thought I was going to be the only one that picked Mizzou here, and it's not because of what Kentucky looked like against Georgia. I don't think that it mattered who Georgia played last week for the most part. Georgia was going to come out and obliterate. There was a lot of media floating yummy rat poison, as Nick Saban calls it, after Georgia struggled with a not good Auburn team. But Mizzou, here's the only thing I worry about with Mizzou. Can Eliah Drinkwitz get out of his own freaking way? Like, his mismanagement of the clock at the end of games is sometimes astounding. And I know you didn't get to see this, but I was watching the end of that game at the same time as I was watching the Texas-Oklahoma game, had two TVs going. It's 4th and 35. Have all three timeouts. There was a little over 2 minutes left. Punt the ball, and you try and get a stop. You just do. Instead, Drinkwitz goes for it, doesn't get it. Gives LSU, it was a 20-yard gain on the play, so it's like, okay, cool, you got 20 yards. You needed 35. I assure you that your punter can punt the ball further than 20 yards. He had a 60-yard punt in that game. Something. Drinkwitz, to me, is very frustrating in a lot of regards like that. He mismanaged the Kansas State ending that game, caused a 5-yard backup on that field goal to win the game. That's what worries me about this pick, but I really do think that Kentucky is vulnerable to be beaten with the pass. Brady Cook, Luther Burden, Zoo, and a close one.
Feel very, very swayed. Change my mind. I sit here and think about the fact that I was probably going to pick Kentucky. The more I think about it, for starters, I never would have, just like last week with LSU Missouri, I never would have thought this was a game that we would be spending our time picking this year during the preseason. But here we are. These teams overachieving so far, for sure. My reasoning that I'm going to pick Kentucky, and I think if it comes down to quarterbacks, I think Brady Cook's going to outduel Devin Leary all day. Devin Leary hasn't looked good. Georgia made Devin Leary throw the ball. Shut down Ray Davis and made Devin Leary throw the ball. And Missouri has to do the same thing. I think if Luther Burden and Brady Cook can get that hookup going early in the game on the road in a tough environment, that there's a very good chance Missouri can win this game. But I think the worst thing that could have happened for Missouri in this game, now granted they both lost last week, but Missouri didn't get blown out. Kentucky got blown out. Kentucky's going to come out there with a chip on their shoulder at home. That fan base, I can't see the Kentucky fan base knowing that they're still Kentucky and that they're not a national championship contender jumping ship. I think they're going to be fired up for this game. I think the fact that they absolutely got waxed by Georgia means that Mark Stoops is going to spend all week getting this team fired up, ready to come out and play. And I think Ray Davis is going to be able to run it down Missouri's throat. That's one thing Missouri hasn't exactly looked great on is defense. I think Missouri's got the better quarterback, but I think Kentucky having home field advantage and the better defense means that Kentucky is going to win this game. Once again, I'm rolling with home field as a theme, sticking with the 2.5 points. It's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a slugfest, be a very physical slugfest. I've got to pick Kentucky. I have not agreed with guys at all in the last three picks, so I got to catch up in these standings too. Got to happen. So,
what are the standings, by the way? I did not have a good week.
Filling in on week six, Matt went 3-3. I went 3-3, and Witt went 4-2, which puts the standings currently with Matt in first at 20-16, Witt in second at 500 at 18-18. I am 16-20.
Oh, it's anybody's. It's still anybody's.
Still a lot of games left to pick this year. It's going to come down to Army Navy.
Oh, Jesus.
To come down to Army Navy. But moving on, that was our last SEC game of the week. Fourth consecutive week, Notre Dame finally ends this brutal stretch, hosting USC at home. USC's ranked 10th, Notre Dame ranked 21st. This game is in South Bend, another pick 'em. Every single game except the LSU game that we're picking tonight is it's under a 4-point line. But Notre Dame is favored at 2.5.
Wow.
Notre Dame is favored at 2.5. NBC, 7:30. Notre Dame and USC, top 25 matchup.
So I think I'm the only one that's going to pick Notre Dame here. I really do. I don't even want to see your facial reactions. You know, Chad just shook his head, so I know I'm not. But I think the reason Notre Dame wins this game is, number one, Notre Dame's at home. Number two, Notre Dame plays defense. USC has no defense at all. Not a single game this year have they played defense except for against Stanford, and that's just because Stanford doesn't have an offense. So Caleb Williams is probably the best player in the country, at least top five. I think he's the best quarterback in the country, at least. I'd take him on the Falcons in a heartbeat, even if Desmond Ridder's throwing for 365 yards in a game at home against the Texans.
But quarterback of the future came out this week, baby.
I'd still take Caleb Williams. Dude, he's an absolute stud. Man can throw the ball at any arm angle. He can run, whatever. Absolute stud. They're going to put up some points, but I think Sam Hartman has a get-right game after what happened against Louisville, against USC's terrible secondary. So I'm going to take Notre Dame winning this game. I think it's going to be in the 30s, like 35-30, but Notre Dame wins by like 4 or 5. Matt, what do you think?
I'm going USC. Just not even really thinking about, understand the defensive argument, but I have watched Notre Dame struggle past 3 weeks. Obviously, I thought Ohio State's defense was just really, really good. I still think they're pretty good. Louisville made Notre Dame look very, very pedestrian. Now, Louisville's not an easy place to play. I feel like that's a very slept-on home environment in the ACC. It's not easy. Jeff Brohm has got a pretty good team over there this year, too. But look, Notre Dame, I went from being pretty high on them to they are very much still in college football purgatory. They just don't, there's no identity. Marcus Freeman, I thought, was a really good hire, and I thought he coached really well up to the point where he only let 10 guys go out on the field against Ohio State. But honestly, since then, like, I'm sorry, you're better than Duke. You should not have wound up in that dogfight. You should have beaten Duke. It should have been a blowout, but you should have been like in control of that game. You're Notre Dame. Should have beaten Louisville. You're Notre Dame. This week, I think USC is just going to exploit them in some ways. And I don't know that I think Sam Hartman's good, but I don't know that Notre Dame's going to be able to. Oh, USC's defense is abysmal, but I just feel like they're going to get enough stops. So I'm going USC.
Matt's the outlier on this game here. So Notre Dame, I can't really fault Marcus Freeman other than for the Ohio State loss. But even going into Louisville this week, the way they played and just absolutely got beat up front by a really good performance from Louisville's running back. Shout out to Jack Harlow. You know, Jack Harlow's presence there made a big difference. It's so tough to get kids up 4 consecutive games, not to mention 2 road games back-to-back at Duke and Louisville. At those environments were ready. Those 2 teams are on the rise with new coaches. And they were ready for you. This was their Super Bowl, excuse me. But now you come back home, finally get through this 4-game stretch before the bye week. Notre Dame, I think, will come out ready to play, ready to get through this absolutely brutal 4-game stretch they just had to endure. And Notre Dame's defense, again, I agree with Witt. USC does not play defense. I don't care how good Caleb Williams is. USC's defense is not going to be able to stop an equally as good quarterback on the other side of the football. Now, Sam Hartman did throw three interceptions this past week, but that was his first three interceptions of the year. So I just think with them coming home, it's another big matchup. Just because they lost to Louisville and Ohio State two out of the last three games, I don't think the fans in South Bend are going to check out. I think that place is going to be lit. I think it's going to be a really, really tough environment. And once again, home field advantage is really, really important in a week of stacked games. And I just think that USC is vulnerable defensively. And now USC, you look at their schedule, Notre Dame's ending their brutal stretch. USC is starting their brutal stretch. And we've long talked about it on this show that we don't think USC's defense is good enough to carry water through that entire stretch. And I think it starts this week. Notre Dame going to bounce back off the loss to Louisville. Give me the Irish going into the bye week, which they so well deserve. Let's not forget, this team has not had a bye week yet, and they played their first game of the year in Ireland. Notre Dame, what a tough, tough stretch they've had to endure on their schedule this year. Give me the Irish to bounce back going into their bye week, and then that puts USC in a vulnerable position to play for their playoff lives the rest of the year. Last pick of the week. Just talked about Mario Cristobal's incompetence. Now they have to go on the road, 7:30 night game, ABC in Chapel Hill. Somehow Miami still ranked 25th. North Carolina ranked all the way in the top 12. UNC, 3.5-point favorite, 7:30 ABC. Drake May and the Tar Heels hosting the Hurricanes. Whit.
I think after last week, Miami's about to start a little downward spiral. We're about to see Miami end up with 5 or 6 losses this year. They're not that good of a team. I don't know how they beat A&M, honestly. Another game I really didn't get to watch a lot of, but high-scoring game. Still don't understand it, especially after they just lost to Tech. But UNC's looked okay. I honestly think both these teams are absurdly overrated where they're at right now. And I think they've been overrated all season. I like Drake May. I think he's a phenomenal quarterback. I think he's going to be a really, really, really good NFL quarterback. But I still don't think North Carolina is that solid, especially on defense. So I think it's going to be a closer game. But I think UNC wins, and I think they win by more than a touchdown.
I'm going UNC here. I think that Mario Cristobal lost his team a little bit in the way that he handled the entire situation with the media. UNC is playing really, really well right now, and they look like they found a little bit of defense too. So overall, I'm going to go. I just think UNC is a better team than Miami is right now. It just depends on what Miami team shows up. I think the Miami team that showed up and played against Texas A&M is not the Miami team that we saw last week in Coral Gables. I'm going UNC. Mac Brown keeps the Tar Heels rolling.
First time this week, all three of us are in agreement. And more than likely, I can see it not going well for us. But I'm going to have to go ahead and agree with you with you guys, and I'm going to pick UNC as well. UNC defense is actually playing much better this year. And no, that's not saying a lot because of how bad they have been in the past few years. UNC's only given up 216 yards a game through the air. That's really not a bad stat. Gene Chizik's got the boys playing pretty well in Chapel Hill. I agree. I think Drake May is overshadowed by Caleb Williams as probably one of the best quarterbacks coming into this draft, but I think Drake May absolutely is going to be a top 10 pick, one of the first quarterbacks taken off the board. The dude is unbelievable. I love that, contrary to what we were talking about earlier, kids don't go to a place and stay like they used to. Drake May does. Drake May is a UNC born and bred kid, had plenty of NIL offers in the transfer portal to get him to leave and go somewhere else. He didn't. He chose to stay. I actually think this is probably the best North Carolina team Mac Brown has had. He's been there. The defense is much improved. You know, look at last week as a quick example. Syracuse coming into town. Syracuse was undefeated, but they were coming off a loss. Clemson. That could have been a sleepy week, a day start time versus a Syracuse team that maybe kind of overlooked, knowing that you've got Notre Dame, not Notre Dame, but Miami coming in. They didn't do that. and not sleepwalk through this game. They got Tez Walker back. The NCAA lifted that whole thing, got that situation straightened out. They dropped 51 on Syracuse. And Syracuse doesn't have a bad little quarterback, and they held him to 7. I think UNC is vastly improved. I think they're a little – well, I take that back. I'm going to call them underrated, but I think 12 is probably a great spot for them. I just think they're a better team, and I think this team is right there with Florida State and Louisville in the conversation of who's going to win the ACC. I'm not going to call UNC a national championship contender. I do think that UNC is at least, if they don't completely fall apart like they did last year, a 10 or 11 win possible team after the bowl games are all said and done. 3.5-point favorite. This game is also at home. Once again, I think home field advantage plays huge. Be the Tar Heels in Chapel Hill. I agree with Witt. I think Miami kind of starts to take a little bit of a downward spiral.
UNC, you're saying that they're contenders in the same sense as Mississippi State is a contender?
UNC has a 1 in 133 chance of winning a national championship, just like Mississippi State.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into Rowdy Southern Saturday. If you enjoyed the episode, please give us a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple Music, and follow our social media @RowdyPod on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.